of course, it's been extremely difficult at times. I'm not going to sit here and say it's been pleasurable or easy, because it hasn't. It's a very difficult path in many respects. But it is interesting, in the last while, and I don't know how long this while is, because I'm not quite sure really, I have been increasingly in touch with the freedom that comes from letting go. And I can't really explain why. It's difficult to put into words. But I'm definitely happier and more content than I've ever been, which I find amazing and sort of mystifying, that through letting go one can find freedom. In fact, I think it's probably the only way one can find freedom, ultimately, is letting go of all those things that we cling on to and are attached to. I think that when there's reduction of choice, that's an interesting thing. In the modern world, we've got so much freedom. And in my life, in a way, my freedom has been very curtailed in many respects. The options available has been curtailed. And actually that simplified my life in a really good way. So I'm left with the choice of, do I make the most of what I've got, or do I not make the most of what I've got? But I don't really spend a lot of time thinking about all the other things I might do or might have, because they're not options. So I think it's interesting how reduction of choice, I think, can also lead to freedom. So the more we can pare our lives down to the essentials, that can be liberating. It's tempting just to kind of get a burn. It's exciting, isn't it? The death. Got lots of nurses here. So the other reason why I was really happy to give this talk is because when I got ordained, I really loved the six element practice. I remember being on that retreat at Tirunelveli in the shrine room, sitting at the back at the right hand corner, I think. Somehow these things get sort of seared into one's memory sometimes, don't they, these important moments. And doing the practice, and it felt such a relief to have got to the point where I could turn and contemplate reality directly without completely freaking myself out, which is what I'd been more likely to do previously. As Dayanandi said, I've always been very drawn to this idea of penetrating through to the truth, of trying to see things as they really are directly. I've always found that really motivating. I've always really wanted it. I've wanted to know what is life about? What is it all? What is reality? How do we see things? But previously to that, I hadn't really been integrated enough to cope. And I'd had very good friends at Tirunelveli. I would sometimes do things like go on solitary and weird myself out, thinking, when is a tree a tree, and has a sheep got Buddha nature, and these sorts of things. And I had very good friends who said, Prue, as I was called then, do the metta bhavana and the mindfulness of breathing as taught in the stages, go back to basics. And it was really, really good advice, I have to say. So I'm going to put a little plug for the system of meditation as a progressive path. Let's just leave the spatial model for a moment. Because I think that for me, doing insight practices prematurely wouldn't have helped me at all. I think I probably would have had a psychotic breakdown. In fact, I'm rather surprised I didn't anyway. But I think I was prevented from doing so by having really good friends, really good Kalyana Mitras and people at Tirunelveli who knew me well, who said, you know, develop positive emotion, become integrated, do the basic practices, don't run ahead of yourself. So I just thought I'd make that point, that I do think that these insight practices do need to be handled with care, and one does need to know that what you're dealing with is, it's really strong stuff, you know, it's the human mind, and not to rush into it in the wrong kind of way. But anyway, so I thought those are the two reasons. One is that my personal practice is very much about spiritual death, and I've been excited by that. And also I love the six element practice, and I've done it on and off ever since I got ordained. I can't say I've done it. I've done it regularly, let's say that. Regularly is a lovely loose term. I'm not saying I've done it frequently, but I've done it regularly. And a lot of what I'm going to say reiterates a lot of the points from Viveka's and Kula Prabha's talks. And I don't think that matters. I think it's good to hear the same things over and over again from different viewpoints. And interestingly enough, we've all focused on fear. All three speakers have drawn out fear as a major topic, as we'll see when I do my talk, which I don't think is any coincidence, because it is such a... it is going to come up when we meditate. I also thought it was a bit of a relief, actually, that we're all talking about more or less the same thing. I thought, well, that's good. We are all on the same spiritual path, and we are all meditating in the same way, more or less. Okay, so Parami, I'm going to launch into the written version now, so you can stop. So I'm going to start with a poem from Govinda to Amitabha, which I think gives us a very good poetic sense of spiritual death. Give me the strength to birth the sheath of selfhood, and like the seed that dies in order to be reborn, let me fearlessly go through the portals of death, so that I may awaken to the greater life, the all-embracing life of thy love, the all-embracing love of thy wisdom. So I think essentially spiritual death is all about letting go. Letting go or going beyond a fixed sense of self. And this means letting go into the present moment and investigating our experience there that we discover in the present moment. And we find that there's nothing that's fixed and unchanging. It's just a constant flow of change. And this means that it's empty of anything whatsoever that's fixed, including our sense of self. And as Bhante said in his original lecture on this stage in the system of meditation, quote, meditation is a bardo, an intermediate state, because when we meditate in the true sense, we die. In other words, the subject-object distinction itself must be transcended. The mundane individuality, pure and perfect though it may be, must be broken up. Here the key practice is the recollection of the six elements, involving the giving back of earth, water, fire, etc., elements in the universe, relinquishing in turn earth, water, fire, air, space, even our individualized consciousness. This is the key practice for breaking up our sense of relative individuality. And as outlined in Chittapala's booklet, he also mentions other practices that are very relevant to this stage. For example, the recollection of impermanence, the recollection of death, including the contemplation of the decomposition of the corpse, reflection on the root verses of the Tibetan Book of the Dead, meditation on change, and the Shunyata meditations, including the Nidana chain meditations on conditionality. So there's quite a lot in there that one could do if one wanted to. But Bhante strongly favours the six element practice as being the most concrete and practical way of practicing this particular stage. So this is the stage that the practice we're probably most familiar with. I'm sure we've all been given the six element practice at ordination. And specifically linking this with the stage of spiritual death. However, in this talk, I'm going to approach it slightly differently, going to broaden it out as a topic. And I'm going to look at what spiritual death means as actual experience in meditation, and how we can bring this attitude into whatever meditation practice we might be engaged with at any given time. So I think from this point of view, the stage of Bhante's system of meditation can be approached in a really broad and inclusive and creative way. So in the talk I'll be covering three main areas. I'm going to talk about death and fear, first of all. Then I'll talk about death and love. And then I'll look at how we can look for this experience of spiritual death within the different practices that we do in the movement and the order.